Hey, good morning. Okay, guys, good morning, good morning. I got some ruggle up, but not for now, for later tonight. For the night day before, I got some ruggle. I'll come back tonight. Okay, let's start. The Mishnah in the beginning of Rosh Hashanah. Let's start off with that. Okay, beginning of the third paragraph. One of the interesting parts of Rosh Hashanah is that the Torah never uses the word. What word does the Torah not use regarding Rosh Hashanah? Shofar. Which ever doesn't appear, which right away, right off the bat, starts my mind thinking. When the Torah describes a mitzvah d'alamin, it talks about an item. Creates other couples to mom. When the Torah thinks about eating matzah, it says an item. But there are a couple of matzahs. When the Torah thinks about a sukkah station, shivas yam. So generally, the Torah is pretty clear describing the chaykas. Here, the Torah doesn't talk about the chaykas. It just says, yom churah yelachem, it should be a day of blowing. Zichron churah yelachem. So put that in your mind somewhere. We'll get to it maybe later, maybe Sunday. We're not just going to let one sleep down. We're trying to let away a lot of dinei shofar. Okay, but the Gemara says, not our Gemara, you saw it in Rashi, there's a Zera Shava linking Yovel, because Yovel, the 50th year, is also the time of Rosh Shava. There's a Zera Shava linking Yovel to Rosh Hashanah. And just like on Yovel, when growing Yom Kippur, we blow with the Shofar, because in Parshas Behind, where this guy is blowing on Yom Kippur, Yovel, it says the word Shofar. So we transport the word Shofar from Yovel year to Rosh Hashanah. So we now know, before our Gemara begins, now on Rosh Hashanah, we need to blow a Shofar. It shouldn't just be a day of sounds. I would have thought, woo, ow, make some sounds, and it's a day of sounds. That's what the Torah says. Yom Churah Yelachem, just scream and shout. So we have to use an instrument to create sounds. How do we know? The Gzera Shava from Yovel, the 50th year, to Rosh Hashanah. Now our Mishnah begins. What's the first line of the Mishnah? Kol HaShofaros Ksheros. I'm not going to use any of the terms because it's going to be a big debate what those terms mean. So until we see what those terms mean, I'm going to avoid using the terms because they're just going to confuse you. So I'm going to use an English word called an appendage. Kol HaShofaros Ksheros. All these animal appendages that can make sound, right? A liver can't make a sound. A toenail can't make a sound. But all these head appendages that can create sound are kosher. They're all kosher, which is really interesting. Kol sounds like everything. Chutzmi, what's the one exception according to the Chachamim?
Kara.
A cow, you can't use the appendage to create sound to be onto the mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah. Why the Chachamim pasul the appendage of the cow? Because the Torah calls it a rather than a, and we know that we need a because we learn out from the 50th year. And what does Rabbi Yossi respond to the Chachamim? Wait a second, that's not fair. Because it's not para that is specifically tainted and blemished because it's called a Karen. What else is called a Karen?
Everything else.
All appendages. So all appendages have that terrible curse word called Karen, three-letter word. So if you can eliminate a para because it's called a Karen, eliminate everything. That's how the Mishnah ends. We don't really have the Chachamim retorting to Rabbi Yossi. We don't have their voice. The Gemara then provides a voice. Not anything where a second grace manager is written down. Yudanasi is very, very economical about what he wrote and what he didn't write. Now the Gemara says, okay, let's continue the conversation. The Yossi has a good point. The Yossi says the word Karen can't be that despicable, and it can't be the disqualification of Hara, because everything's called Karen. So what's the Chachamim's retort? We don't have this in their voice, but the base manager was assuming this. Well, they said to the Yossi, everything else, all the appendages that are called Karen, but they're also called shofar. So if you have the word shofar applied to you, like a ram, for example, which we end up using, or any other animal that has the word shofar, it's all right to also be called karen. But there's one animal, the bad animal in the Mishnah, which is only called karen, the Chacham is saying. It's never called shofar. It's only called karen. It's disqualified. What's that bad animal that only gets the karen name? And that's how the Rabbanan retorts Rabbi Yossi. Now you may have seen the continuation. What's Rabbi Yossi say? I'll just summarize it. If you didn't follow the Gemara, all right, because we don't need it for the sugya today. It's an interesting brush. Rabbi Yossi says, you know what? You think, Chachamim, that all the shofaros, all the appendages are called shofar and karen, and Par is the only bad guy because he's only called karen? I'll make a drasha and a pasuk in Tehillim, and I'll show you that even the para is called the shofar sometimes. It doesn't really have the word shofar, but if we conjugate shor par, we make it shofar, the Tav Hashem is shor par, so the word par sounds like it's close to the word shofar.
So the Yossi has a drasha, which the Chacham obviously don't accept, that's the end of the conversation, that a para is terrible, according to the Chachamim. It's only called a Karen. A, all the other appendages are called Karen and Shofar, according to the Chachamim. And the Yossi equals the balance. So you know what? All the appendages are called Shofar and Karen. And you know what other appendages called Shofar and Karen, according to the Yossi? A para. And that's how the Machlokas ends. Now, logically, everyone holds the same issue. You need to be called shofar, not just Karen. The only debate between the Yossi and the Chachamim is whether a para is only called a
shofar,
or it's also called a shofar. But this logic that you can't get by on Rosh Hashanah without being called a shofar is universal. There's no one debating that issue. The only issue up for debate is, well, what is a para also called a shofar? A para is a strike against it. It's called a Karen. But you know what? A lot of appendages have that same strike in the Mark Rots circuit. By the way, where do we know that a par is called a Karen? Which pasuk does the Mishnah quote? Bichar,
Sharo,
Yosef. He is as strong as an ox. And to demonstrate the strength of Yosef, the Bishar, the male para, Vikarne Re'en Karnav. And his Karen of this para is as strong as a Re'em. A Re'em was a strong ram, probably an ibex or a wildebeest. It was really tall antelopes, what we call a big moose almost, as opposed to a small little ram that you touch and you pet. So a Ya'el and a Ayal, these are male, female and male rams, and a Re'em was like a souped up, hormone-possessed ram. That's in throughout Tanakh. Oh, you're a Re'em. You're a Re'em, the carne Re'em, with these really, really big antelopes. We'll talk about that later that you've seen. So the Shar is like a Re'en, like an Ibex, and they both have Karens. And according to the Chachamim, they're only called a Karen. The appendages aren't called the Shofar. Too bad for the Par. Whereas according to Yossi, you know why I can't use the Par in Rosh Hashanah? Because even though a Par is called the Karen, it's also called a Shofar. How do I know from a Drasha? It doesn't really say the word Shofar, but I can play around with the words. That's how the Machlokes ends. We're going to discuss today the following question. Two words. Who cares? Who cares about what word the Torah uses to describe the appendages? What possible difference could it make when it's called a shofar, what's called a keren? What's the gather here? What a puzzle. Could it be? Remember, I started a few minutes ago, the word shofar doesn't even appear in Rosh Hashanah. The Torah says, Yom Teruah Yelechem. Okay, so we learned you can't use your voice. The Torah just said, Yom Teruah. You know what Rosh Hashanah would have looked like? It would have looked like, I don't know, Tfilas Shachris in Israeli Shiva. Oh, yeah, yeah. And screaming at the top of the hill. Everyone's screaming. The Torah says, don't scream. Don't scream with your mouth. Scream with an instrument. What makes sound? Okay, maybe something natural, as opposed to something synthetic. Okay, but what difference does it make? And now you're telling me, Reb Yossi and the Chacham, because they're not really debating the need to be called a shofar. They're just debating whether a cow is called a shofar. Everyone needs the name shofar on top of the word Karen. If you call the Karen, you're in trouble. If you call the shofar a Karen, you're fine. Who cares? Why would there be halacha in Rosh Hashanah that I have to use an appendage that makes sound that has the right name? Now, there are answers to that question. Don't get me wrong. You can think about it. I want to show you today a little bit of how learning lambdas and getting down to the core of the matter helps you understand the mashallah. Why would a Kodesh Baruch Hu want us to use a shofar, not a keren? Even if there's no fundamental substantive difference between a keren and a shofar, which is either a Ramban doesn't like. Why would it make a difference? Why, what about our mitzvah and Rosh Hashanah depends on how the Torah describes it? Matzah, it's not called anything else. It's like alternatives to matzah. You take some flour, you bake it into some non-chametz tzibur. What difference does it make what it's called? Why should chetzei mitzvos be defined based on what the Torah describes terminologically? Okay, we don't have time to discuss that. I wish I had a board today. Maybe we'll get a board. But put that on a shelf. One approach to the sugya is it all has to do with terminology, whether the Torah calls it a shofar in addition to a keren, or it only calls it a keren as a par is according to the Chachamim without that fancy drasha everybody else. But it's not just their problem logically. It's also a problem because the categories don't fit. Now, I don't know how much of the Gemara you saw. Tosfos already says, wait a second. You have to be called a shofar in addition to keren, and if you're only called a keren, not a shofar, you're puzzled. And that's why the Chachamim pasul apara, and if you ask me what pasul apara, that is drasha. What else is also called a keren, not a shofar, that's possible that doesn't make it into the Mishnah? What do we know that a ram is called a keren? Bechor, sharo, hadar, lo. The karne, rain, karna. That's the model of a keren. The bracha tiyosin is you're going to have the keren of a rain. Oh my goodness, the keren of a rain. That's incredible. It's the model of a keren. Karne, rain, karna. So what should the Mishnah have said? Kol ha-shofaros ksheros chutz mishel para mishel rain. Let's see, Tosin. This is Tosin's kasha. That's the first kasha. It was all just a question of how it's called, and I should eliminate a para because it's only a keren, not a shofar, according to the Chachamim. And I should eliminate rain because it's the quintessential keren, not a shofar, according to everyone. Rabbi Yossi just says, by the way, I found a pasuk in Tehillim that can create the word shofar for a para. Great, so the bachelor of para. Rabbi Yossi should have been the terrain, the fossil should be in the Mishnah, it's not a Mishnah. So it's not just that these categories don't seem to make sense, like what difference does it make what the Torah calls it, but it also don't seem to fit the halacha. It can't just be what you're called, because why does the Mishnah consider rain? There must be something else here, the Ramban starts to realize, something else aside from the names. And then the Ramban actually quotes Yishami, he says, not only is there something missing from the Mishnah that should be possible, but there's something that's kosher that should be possible. Let's read the Ramban together, the beginning of the Ramban.
The Tosfos gives an answer, right?
We'll get to Tosfos. We'll get to Tosfos later. So you see, I don't have another sheet, so I'm going to give you a set sheet here. I have a sheet here. Okay, so I'll give you a sheet.
Here, I
have
it.
You need to have it here. Okay. Sorry, I don't want you to use your sheet. Later. Okay, I'll just use your sheet. Okay, thank you. Just look at that, okay?
I want you to see inside. I have two. We have two.
I'll give it back to you later.
Yeah, I'll look with him.
Okay. Oh, here's my sheet. Okay. Let's see the Ramban. Can you share Ramban? Guys, welcome to the Ramban. Ramban is the core of oneness. We'll talk a little bit today about how perishable pay follows, because we'll see it in the Ramban. Kashila, where's the Ramban? Source 2. Ligamar Dilan. Yael, am I kosher? Yael is a female ram. Ayal, Aleph Yud Lamed, is a male ram. Yael is a female ram. We never see that a Yael is called a shofar. It's never called a keren, which is not talked about in the Torah, at least in that context. The Penage is not talked about. We know that a male ram is called a shofar. How do we know? Because at Har Sinai, a male ram's horn was blown, and the word to describe a male ram's horn is not a yal, but is a yovel, because of the use of yovel. So, in Shalcha Yovel, when Hashem blew the male ram's appendage, they all went up to the mountain because Har Sinai ended. And the Torah describes Har Sinai, but he called the shofar halech mechazek miyot. So, that male ram, which is blown in Har Sinai, is called the shofar. So, why is a male ram's horn kasher in theory? Because it's called the shofar. But a female ram's horn is never called anything. So the whole conversation between the Yosef and the Chum's got to be called something, and you got to be called the shofar. If you're going to call the keren like a para, you're in trouble, and you're puzzled. So on the one hand, a rain is never called a shofar, and yet the Mishnah doesn't list it to disqualify. And on the other hand, the opposite side, we have things that are kosher. We actually use ram's horns, female ram's horns, even though they never called a shofar. And that's the Ramban's double-edged question. There are two kashas, and it's not just the logic seems difficult, but the sets don't work. If the only issue is what the Torah calls it, you've got problems on both sides. You've got certain things that are puzzled that aren't listed in the Mishnah, a rain, because it's never called a shofar. And you've got certain things that are kosher that are never called a shofar. So it can't be, the Ramban says, that it all depends on how the Torah calls it. Something as arbitrary as that, where the Torah calls, well, it's not arbitrary, then there's a reason, but something that to us doesn't have any reason that we can put our fingers on. So they're all the same, and they're all the same botanically, and they all create the same type of sound, and they're all kosher, and they're all part of one set, but you know, I pick out from the set the things that happen to be privileged to call a shofar.
What would be the alternative for the Ramban? Just put 30 animals in the Mishnah?
Put
5 more animals in the Mishnah?
Only put a rain.
And
call
the
shofar.
And then the
Yael is kosher. Call hashofaros ksheros, including a Yael.
Okay, fine.
Chutz mishofar v'shofar.
No, that's not a rain.
So the Ramban says, you know what, there's got to be something else. It can't just be that we've got all these appendages, and I haven't used the word Shofar or Keren yet. I haven't defined it because we must clearly get to the bottom. There's no definition. It can't be that you get all these appendages from the heads of animals, and they're all the same because they all can create sound, and I just decide which is kosher, which is puzzle, by the way the Torah refers to them. These words, Shofar, listen carefully. Here's the punchline of today's shiur. The words Shofar and Keren are not just decisions Hashem made to apply a label to you and a label to you, and this label is good, this label is terrible. The word Shofar means one thing. It refers to one type of appendage. And the word Keren refers to a different type of appendage. They're not just names that are applied to things that are similar. They're different. Keren is one type of sound-creating mechanism, which is puzzle. And Shofar is a different type of sound-creating mechanism, which is kosher. Now we're going to see today the Ramban has two different shots. What makes Ramban so incredible is, as opposed to many children, they just give you their conclusion. Ramban always takes you on a journey. I thought this, but then I saw this, and I heard this. Ramban, if you ask me to say one word to describe the Ramban, he would say synthesizer. Because in the Middle Ages, we'll talk about this a little bit later. Some people were very didras, some people went to pshat, some people went to tikkun, some people Rashi versus the Eben Ezra, and Nechton, a bunch of everything. The Gaon, yes, the Gaon, not. Yishalmi, yes, Yishalmi, not. Ramban, this is pattern, everything. Let me see if I can process everything. Yishalmi, Gaon, Tosefta, Midrashim, language. We'll see language today coming in. So the Ramban is going to take us on a journey. Let's follow the Ramban's journey as to how he's going to solve why a par is possible going to the chum is not called a shelf, it's not just arbitrary, and why a ram is kosher, even though it may never be called a shelf or a female calf, and what about his ibex? Ramban says as follows, the first shot, a little bit of background. In nature, there are two types of appendages. One is a bony, calcified, basically a bone sticking out of the head of an animal. It's one solid calcium bone. In botany or in zoology, it's called an antler. A moose has an antler. An ibex has an antler. These are antlers. They are solid. Basically, taking a bone out of your own, putting it on your neck. A bone on your neck. The word keren applies to those. They're solid, bony, calcified material. Then there's another type of appendage, which has a casing. And that casing is made of protein. And inside, you've got a bone growing through it and into it. But if you took a microscope, you'd see the difference between the smooth, protein-based casing and the calcium that's growing in, what we call the male part. The zygote is the thorax, and the opening is the female, the hollow part. Ramban says, whatever in halacha, whenever we're referring to a bone on the top of the head of an animal, that's called a keren. And Hashem doesn't want us blowing with bones, even if we hollow them out to make a sound. And anything that's a bone is totally off the grid for shofar. It's not even gonna factor into our Mishnah. If you even consider, Hashem doesn't want you blowing bones, kerens. For example, what's called a keren that's puzzle and doesn't even appear in the Mishnah? Because it's so obvious that it's puzzle, because it's a bone and it's a keren, and Hashem doesn't want us blowing bones. The Mishnah is even talking about those, even before you write the Mishnah. Bones are off the table. Now, for the discussion. She doesn't want us blowing bones. Mishnah says, call, what's the next word? Call? Shofar. If it's not bones, bones are off the table. Forget about bones. What about shofar? Not bones, but casings that have been hollowed out. It's a totally different element. They look the same, but the mechanisms for creating sound are totally different. One is a hollow creation of sound where it ricochets off of the walls and your breath can control it more, like a saxophone or a flute. Again, not metal, we don't use metal for shofar, but it's the same concept. You've got a space, you're exhaling into it, and you can modulate it and regulate it based on the strength, based on the pitch, based on the length. You can modulate because it's you and the material that's being shofar. A kazoo, you can't really modulate because it's just a small area that you blow air through. A harmonica, you can't really modulate, it's just going right through. So Hashem says, I don't want kazoos and harmonicas. I don't want bones. I want shofars. Hollow. By the way, all the shofaros are kosher because they're not bones, like those rings. But there's one shofar that's called a bone by the Torah, even though naturally it's a shofar. It's a halal. What's called a keren, according to the Chachamim, only and therefore it's possible, even though botanically it's a casing. This is how the Ramban's first approach is. This is his primary approach to get to the second one. Let's talk about it again.
What?
Wait a second. There's something before the Mishnah. There's a decision before the Mishnah that Hashem made. Don't use bones. Because you can't use bones that are solid, what's off the map?
Ram.
It doesn't even factor into the Mishnah. Mishnah isn't talking about that. You know that on your own. Because the Torah uses the word shofar by Yovel, fit your ear, we bring it over to Hashem and Kippur, you need a shofar. Shofar is a hollow casing, it's been hollowed out. A bone is a bone, a keren is a bone. Therefore, you can use everything, and you can't use rain, it's off the table. And not only that, now follow through, you can use something even if it's not called a, as long as botanically it's hollow. What can you use even though it's never called a, but since it's botanically hollow, what can you use? A,
or
a ram, a female ram. Because it's hollowed out, it fits the bill. You don't need the title shofar, you just need to be the item in nature that's a hollow casing. So ram makes the cut. Rain doesn't make the cut. Yael makes the cut. Rain doesn't make the cut. But there's one thing that should make the cut, because it's hollow. But you know what? The Torah happens to slap on a bad word for it, and that bad word ruins it. What do we call that animal? Who should make the cut because it's not a bone. It's hollowed out horn. It's a shofar, but not a keren, and we should be able to use it, but the Torah calls it a terrible thing. That's the Ramban's.
Why the keren? Why is it out of the parsha?
We don't know. That's another Ramban's. I gave my explanation because it's a less human voice, but it reminded Ramban's. We'll see. That's the part of this, we'll talk about that later. Great question. Guys, let's read the Ramban together. I want you to learn how to read the Ramban yourself. Let's just give it a chance for you to read the Ramban. Let's read the Ramban first. The Lin Nira, the first paragraph, the boldface. Let's read a little Ramban together. If you've ever read Ramban, this is great. You actually read what the Rishonim are saying. The Lin Nira. She'en bechlal ha-shofaros. Ela ha-kironim ha-chalulim. You know what a shofar is? The appendages that are hollow. She'zachrusam, the filler, the male, the insertion, Nitalis mehem has been taken out of the cavity. Avol karnei mitzos hachayos, like the appendages of some wild animals. Shekulam etzem echad, they are one bone. Einam belashon shofar ela kerem shmam. In nature we call them a keren, and you can't use that. Let's go to the end of the Ramban. The achshav, the bold face, nisiape, tam ha-mishnah. The Mishnah makes sense. B'shel Yaya, why the Mishnah, how could you use a female ram? The Osam Shelo Huskuru, and also Re'im, as it mentioned. The Chivan, the Shofar Sam Chalulam, the Yael, is a normal hollow out casing, Vadek Sharon. Every normal Shofar is Kasher, Ela Para, Shepasla Kasa Vishma. So according to the Ramban, the real division is not between what the Torah calls it. The real division is bones, no, hollow casings, yes. Yael, one second, Yael, yes, female ram, yes, hollow casing, rain, no. And that all happens off stage, before the Mishnah. Before they came into the base medrash that day, and they talked about a para, everyone walked into the room knowing, by the way, before we write any word in the Mishnah, okay, we all know out here, can't use bones, so rain, you're not part of this conversation. And you can't use shofar, so ram is a part of the conversation. Now let's talk about a para. On the one hand, it's a shofar, botanically. On the other hand, the Torah at Christmas, it calls it a bedroom. Calls it a camera. It never calls it a par. So if I'm saying never calls it a par, it's possible. Yossi says it's kosher because the camera calls it a par. Let's read again in the Ramban. Okay, I'll get your question in a few minutes, Moshe. I want to show you something. The Ramban writes about in his Chiddushim. In 1267, the Ramban made Aliyah to Yerushalayim. And are you listening, guys? Did you go to the Kotel yet?
Yeah.
He came to Yerushalayim and there wasn't even a minyan of Jews. Could you imagine coming to Yerushalayim and not finding 10 Jews? So he tried his hardest to build Yerushalayim. He probably built something called the Beis HaKnesses of the Ramban, which is not the one we have today, but something equivalent, not equivalent to what we near that site. And then he moved up to Akko. Akko was a big bustling port.
There was only water.
And in 1269, I said, it's not clear whether it was when he came back to Akko or when some say when he first landed in Akko in 1267. That's where you landed. You landed in the port. And he landed at some say Erev Rosh Hashanah. And I said, can you give us a shir? So he whipped out a 40-page discussion of Hilchos Rosh Hashanah from his back pocket. They just gave a shir called the Drasha of Rosh Hashanah. It's a little bit machshava, it's a little bit halakha. And it gets to our question here, but I want to show you something amazing, okay? Let's read the Rambam, we'll get back to Moshe, we'll get back to the other questions, Eddie, or the Kiva, we'll get back to it. Tani Omer, the Mechila Mehem, source 3. She'ein bechlal ha-shofaris el ha-kronim ha-chalulim. A shofar is only hollow. She'ishlim zachwas b'fneim, there's a nail content inside, v'gadlam niklaf min ha-zachwas, and you scrape off the nail from the hollow casing, the cavity, figon shel kibasim, sheep, shel izim, goats, shel yeim. Those are all out of the conversation. Mishnah isn't talking about goats and sheep. Those are obviously shofar because they fit with all the shofar. Umayata in kushini shoraim, and Ram is also left off the list, line number 4. That's an echaru. It's a bone. I'll prove to you, the Ramban says, here's Ramban being a scientist. I'll prove to you that the ibex, which probably Jews in Spain never saw, because ibexes are natural to Spain, I'll prove to you that an ibex, the Spanish ibex, but not, all right, guys, I'll prove to you that an ibex is a bone. It's just like how strong they are, just like how strong these antlers are, the moves that they can bore you. Whereas a ram is not going to bore you, it's going to hurt you or push you, it's going to bore you, because it's a hollowed out casing with a little bit of meat in it, a little bit of bone in it, as opposed to really strong casing down. You don't get in the way of it. Now the Rabban says something very interesting, okay? Read together. Line number 5 in the Rabban. Guys, listen carefully. Davar zeh chidashti v'yamutzi. I came to this finish when I was very young. Maybe it was in the Toledo Cola in Spain. Not Toledo. Toledo's where you live. Or Girona Cola, or Barcelona Cola for the summer. I thought of this finish. Hirtzesi adamu v'dei Rabban Eitzman. And I went to France, because Rabban lived in Spain. And I pulled this over to some of the Rabban in France. And who are these Rabbanim? Rav Moshe Rav Shneir, Rav Montpleon, Achiv Rav Shmuel, his brother Rav Shmuel, Harav Yechiel in Paris, and they Krom Harav Yom. They're my relative Rav Yom. Wow, a lot of names there. Let me give you guys a sense of who these people are. Okay, I wish I had more. Okay, Tosfos wasn't the person. Tosfos was a group of people for about, say, about 200 years, primarily in France, who changed the history of Torah. Let me tell you who they were. They get a sense of them. 1040, Rashi is born. Okay? Write this down. If you don't ever get this, you'll never understand who the people are. You really wanted to have a board for you. But look at my hand. Yeah. 1040, Rashi is born. Rashi's entire family, the large family, changes all of Torah in France and all of Torah in France. The only thing that's not similar to that is because I'm so hungry in Hungary in the 19th century, because all this family would change and get everything. Rashi had 3 daughters, as you know, most else. So Rashi's generation 1, 3 daughters, generation 2. Okay, just write this out. Rashi, 1040, generation 2, 3 daughters. One of those daughters, she was the big, but she married a man named Meir. What was that daughter's name? Yocheved, easy to remember, like Moshe's mother. So Yocheved, one of Rashi's daughters, married Meir. Now this was a power family. Yocheved and Meir had many children, but 3 specific sons that are known to history and a very important one. One son was named Shmuel. Shmuel, son of Yocheved and Meir, was the Rashbam. Another son was named Yitzchak ben Meir, and he was also one of the Bali Apostles. What was his name? How do we call him? Rabbeinu Yitzchak bar Meir. What do we call him in Tosfos? Rivan, because it's another big Yitzchak. The third son was probably the biggest Bali Apostles. Put a big square around me, 3 squares today. His name wasn't Shmuel. His name wasn't Yitzchak. His name was
Yaakov.
And what was his nickname?
Rabbeinu
Tam, Yaakov Ishtam. Okay? So that's one group of Bali Atosos, 3rd generation. Let's say approximately early 1100s, 1100s. I'm picking numbers out of a hat now. Rashi's 1040, so if you grew up at 1040, your grandchildren are in yeshiva teaching 1110, 1115. Okay, now let's follow. So remember, Yocheved and Miriam have 3 boys. Maybe more, but 3 Bali Atosos.
What were the first 2's actors?
Rabbeinu Rivam, Rashbam, Rivam, and Rabbeinu Tam. Now, Yocheved and Meir, it's a little confusing, but I'm sure. Yocheved and Meir had a daughter. And that daughter, what are Yocheved's daughter? If your name is Yocheved, what do you call your daughter?
Miriam.
A daughter named Miriam. Okay, so there's a Miriam in that third generation. There are some boys, Shmuel, Yaakov, and Yitzchak. And there's a Miriam. Miriam married someone right now, I don't know his name. Miriam's son, now fourth generation, and Miriam's third generation, she's the daughter of Yocheved and Meir, the granddaughter of Rashi. Miriam's son is Rehazake. He is the Tulsus. Whenever you see Re and Tulsus, this is good. Not, he's a nephew of the Rabbeinu Tam. Put a big box around him. That's your second most, not ranking that, but the second, because remember, Tulsus is hundreds of people. And we don't know. In one Masechta they took from one Magal, from another Masechta, there are people who spend their lives trying to decode. On this Masechta, which Tulsus is it? Which member of Tulsus is it? Okay? Rabbeinu Yitzchak Hazakim, his son was named Elchanan. Tulsus Rabbeinu Elchanan, which we have in our Avodah Zarah. Now, sadly enough, just to give you some context, in 1180, I think, towards the end of the 12th century, Elchanan is killed in a pogrom. But keep in mind, this is during the period of the Crusades. The Crusades is 1096, right in the middle of the Crusades. Okay, so now we've talked about two of the four major groups of Tulsus. Remember, Yocheved and Meir have three sons, Rashbam, Rabbeinu Tam, and Rivam. A sister of theirs, Miriam, gives birth to Tulsus, Rehazake, and then to Rehazake. Those are the two groups, the Rashi group on this side, the Rehazake, and Shmuel, Rivam. And then sister Miriam, who's not a boy, she's a girl, she married someone, so yes, Rehazake, and Rehazake. Rehazake
is Rehazake's son?
Right, Rehazake's son and father. Now, Rabbeinu Tam marries a woman named Miriam, one of Miriam's daughters. So Yaakov happens to marry a woman with the same name as his sister. It happens. So now Rabbeinu Tam is married to a woman named Miriam. Okay, good marriage. We don't know much about the marriage, but it's a good marriage. Miriam has a brother. And this brother is called Shimshon. And Miriam and Shimshon have a son named Abraham. So that would be the fourth generation, right? Because Miriam. And Miriam is third generation, like her brothers are going to be Yaakov and Shmuel. Instead of war, I'll give it to you on Sunday, I'll put it to you. Okay? And then Shimshon has a son named Avram, and Avram has two sons. One named after his name, Shimshon. Rabbeinu Shimshon of Shantz. Rashmi Shantz. Put a big box around him. He's the third major Baal of Tulsus. Rabbeinu Tam, Rehazake, and Rabbeinu Shimshon of Shantz, Shin Aleph Nun Sadi. And his brother was the Ritzvah, or called the Re'akata. He was Rabbeinu Yitzchak Ben Abraham, his father. Those are the three major groups of Baalei Tulsus in the 12th century. Okay? The three children of Yocheved and Meir. The Rehazake, the son of Miriam, son of Yocheved and Meir, who got married and had a child and a grandchild. And Rabbeinu Tam's wife's brother, who happens to give birth to someone who gives birth to Rabbeinu Shimshon and Rabbeinu. I'm going to make a table for you and say now this all ends, let's say, around 1200. Just to put things into perspective. Now, the Ramban didn't mean any of these people. He lived in 1200. He lived in the later part of the 12th century. The Ramban's living in Spain. He would never have been able to go over to Rabbeinu Elchanan and meet him. He died in the 1140. We've never been able to go to Rabbeinu Tam. I mean, Rabbeinu Tam is early 12th century. The Ramban and Rabbeinu Yonah, these are the Gedolim in Spain in a different century. However, during the 13th century, now, 1200s, when Rabban and Ben Yonah are in Spain, there's another group of Baalei Tulsus that aren't part of this family. This is the only part that's not part of the family. And this is someone named Yechiel from Paris, Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris. Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris is a very interesting person. So this is now not 12th century France, but 13th century France. In Yechiel of Paris, in France, two interesting parts of history. I don't want to chime in, I don't want to take too much of your time, but there's two interesting parts of history. Number one, he's the first person to quote the bracha of the bar mitzvah, Bar Shem Torah. Doesn't appear in the Gemara, but that's where the source is. And also, in Yechiel of Paris, he was involved in a disputation in 1240, in which the Gemara was put on trial, because one of his Talmidim became a Christian, and ratted out the Talmud for being anti-Gentile.
And he was forced to defend the Talmud in 1240 with Louis the Ninth, King Louis the Ninth. And of course he lost because the bird was in before it started. And what happened in 1260? They brought the Wolbachas in France, which people thought of Wolbachas in the world. And people just horrified what happened. His Talmud was in Hiram Nirenberg, who wrote a kinnah, which will say, on Tisha B'Av, shall we see for the age about the Shas being burned? Thinking how it's finished. So he's involved in a disputation, 1260, 1240. At some point, not clear when, probably before the Shas were burned, hundreds and hundreds, thousands and thousands of writings of Shas, he tries to move to Israel. It's not clear if he ever makes it. And one of the things he wants to do when he gets to Israel, this article, he also wants to start bringing Korbanos again. This is the first person in history that starts thinking, well, maybe if we're back in Eretz Yisrael, maybe we should bring Korbanos. Because you don't need, according to the Rambam, the Beis HaMikdash to build Korbanos. You just need the place, not the building. And this becomes a very, very interesting debate in the 19th century. Some of the greats, whether we should bring some sofer was involved, whether we should bring Herb Pesach. For some reason, Pesach is the one that I'm writing with a lot of people. So this is Rabbi Yechiel, and then he's the Rabbi Rottenberg, who's the Rabbi of the Rosh, who's his father of the poor, so that's a whole different strain. So there are four basic groups of cousins. The three children of Yocheved and Miriam, and Meir. Miriam, the sister of these three children, now reads and has with Yuri Azakim as her lineage and Rabbi Elchanan. There is the brother of the Benetam's wife, who has Rosh Mishansim and Ritzvah. And then there are these people who are not part of the family in France in the 13th century. And in the 13th century, you have a lot of people, I don't even know, even some people you haven't studied it, even though they're called the Chachmei Ivra. These are the last Balei Tosfos who make their way into Tosfos. These are Schneier and Moshe, and these are people in France in the 13th century. Now let's read them about again and see what he's talking about. Okay, in the Drasha, he says, Davar Zeh, source number three. I thought about this finish when I was young. Horns, bones, they're at. Hollow casings, shofar, they're in. We don't have to talk about rams and sheep and goats. That's for sure. You don't have to talk about ibexes. That's for sure they're out. The only issue is the tar. On the one hand, it's hollow. On the other hand, the tar gives a bad name. I said this. I told him I went to France. It's a little issue about it. I told him. Who did I tell to? Rabbeinu Moshe Bar Shneir. Moshe the son of Shneir, Achi Rabbeinu Shmuel, these were like the last Balei Tosfos, three brothers, Shmuel and Moshe. And I told Rabbi Yechiel, in Paris this issue. And of course, I couldn't go into France, so who did I send? My cousin. Who's Rabban's cousin?
Rabbi Yonah.
Here's Rabban's cousin. And also, I was in the Chuvah. Who the Rabban's son, are they going to get his daughter or vice versa? Who knows Rabbi Yonah? What's the name of the jury?
Shari Chula.
Ben Yoma was one of the leading. He lived in a Spanish city called Girona. He was a fanatic. And he led to the banishing of which term?
Yoma.
And the legend has it that he realized he went too far, especially when he heard that Shasim were being burned in France.
In the same place where he went, the Rambam saw.
So at the end of his life, he wanted to do tshuva. He's telling me to do two things for the tshuva. For my banning the Rambam Sfar. I'm going to write this huge, huge sefer called. No. I'm going to write a really huge sefer called. Shari Tzedek. Of which 90% has been lost, as irony would happen. He was banning the Rambam Sfar, and his Sfar didn't survive. And only a small part survived, the Shari Tshuva. A small little slice of the Shari Tzedek. And the second way he's going to do tshuva, he's going to move to Israel. He starts traveling from Girona, where he lived, and he makes his way eastward to Barcelona, and he gets arrested there. He never makes it. You guys know that he never made it. He doesn't know where you're living. So he was Roman's cousin. He said, oh, you're going to France? Yeah, well, do me a favor. Take my papers and show it to the great, show it to Beit Yechiel of Paris. Then we get a chance to meet him, and I wonder what he says about the Kiddush. Can you imagine writing Kiddushah Torah through emails and letters? And, I think you're right, that was the Kiddush. Post some numbers on your Instagram account.
Horns are out, hollows are in, Parah's got a problem, it's in the middle. And not only that, he says, let's take Moshe, Abdu Kulam, three lines in the middle, they all said, he may have us! Who's this guy, Moshe? Spain, he's a great Jewish, this little guy, Moshe. Ben Nachman in Spain, he's a great Jewish, we never thought about it, we always had this issue. For hundreds of years, we just didn't understand the Mishnah. Why does the Mishnah mention an ibex or any? Why is a ram kosher? Never pulled the shofar. And all of a sudden, this great, great Talmud Chacham in Spain sent to his cousin a great Kiddush. Some said that they already saw in Rabbeinu Shimshon, he married Rabbeinu Shimshon Rishon, so it's not such a great Kiddush, it's Tosfos. And Rabban ultimately says, I looked it up in Rabbeinu Elchanan a little bit later, but I didn't give it. I never met Rabbeinu Elchanan, he died before he was born or when he was young. In that program, in 1184, I think. So this is the Kiddush of the Rabban. We can answer one or two questions. And then we're going to see why the Rabban says, you know what, I got to fix the fish. I got to save it from fish. Moshe?
What's the difference between Tosfos and Rabban?
That's what they said. What you just said is what the Chachmei Tzarfat said. That's exactly what Tosfos is saying.
So what? I mean, Rabban makes it clearer and makes it longer.
Okay, then the Rabban says basically that's not what Tosfos means, but I don't have time to get into that now. The Rabban says they're not really what Tosfos means. He debated it.
So, not to get into that.
It could be Tosfos. It's not as elaborate as a pure. Yes.
The words mean different things. First of all, how is the Parah ever called? The Parah ever called Makar, and how is anything
else?
Yeah,
that's the question. So Daniel was saying there's still something wrong with this chat. If a Parah has a hollow shofar, why does the Torah call it? Gerem, and not shofar. According to the
Chacham. Make it up.
There's something false. It's a shofar, just like a ram and a sheep. What's the difference? What's the difference essentially? Yeah, that's enough to me. Up the target. We're getting back to arbitrary. Basically, a shofar of a cow is just like the shofar of a sheep, and just like the shofar of a ram, and just like the shofar of a goat, and they're all hollow, and they're not bony like the ibexes. But you know what? Hashem woke up one morning and said, you know, why don't we call it a parah? Let's call it a carrot, and never call it a shofar. Impossible. You're still back to the arbitrary. You've settled the Neil 2 issues. On the one hand, we know why the ibex is never fucked out in the room, because that's the bones. And we know why you could be kosher even though you never have the word shofar, those are rams.
Sure.
This is not from Parah. If you ask me zoologically, the Parah's not the Parah's doing a shofar. So why is the Torah called a Parah? And who cares? What difference does it make? It's called a why is the Torah called a carrot? Who cares? It's hollow like rams and sheep, not solid like bony ibexes and antlers. So who cares? Raman doesn't raise this question, he raises a different question. He says, you know, I spoke to the grammarians. They said, well, we're not really into grammar. But if you go into a time machine, and we go back to the 12th century, the big debates were in Torah, Manda, and Zionism, and women's learning. The ferocious debates were how to understand Jewish grammar. That sounds basic. Or is the base root of Hebrew words three letters or four letters? Huge debates between Ben Ezra and the Rabbeinu Tam. You can walk into shul. What do you think, Moshe? Is it three letters or two letters? Is it mistile or mistile? Don't get caught up in all the talk of your century. It changes. I promise you, 200 years, no one's going to care about the Ramada, no one's going to care about the Fimumi, no one's going to care about Kari. These are all just things that come and go. This doesn't come and go, guys. This is eternal. This will be here 200 years. Forget everything else. Drown out the noise. It's all just noise. This doesn't end. I promise you in 200 years, no one's going to know the word modern Orthodox. I can promise you that. Charedi, Shomedi, it's not going to make a difference. This can't. If you're hearing right now, can't. This won't be relevant in 200 years. Just like all those grammatical debates, Buddhism, reasons, historians, and academicians, I don't even know. I don't know grammar. That's my Hebrew, is my fucking picture. I don't know grammar, the style, this style. I never studied it. I wish I did. I'm not in any way disparaging it. I don't know it. So Rabban says, wait a second. In Kolzeh, now let's see the Rabban's second stage. In Kolzeh, Yeshua Ot Kushya on Mishnah. Al Das Bali HaTikdor. So I spoke to the Tikdukia, the Dr. the people of the Tikdor. And they told me that the root of the word shofar is not the way I thought. I thought that what does shofar mean in my dictionary, the Rabban's Miriam, and Webster, Miriam, Moshe Dictionary?
Shofar.
Hollow. Casing, as opposed to kerem, which means a bone. That was my way of saying that the words aren't just arbitrary. I'll call you a chauffeur and I'll call you a carer enough that you cut your name out for it. I felt the Ramban said that the Torah is creating categories. What are the categories? Chauffeur or hollow kissings, carer, ponies. That's what I thought. And I spoke to the grammarians. And they told me you got it wrong. Shofar. Shofar doesn't mean hollow, and keren means
solid.
Shofar means beautiful, elegant, and processed. Keren means raw, ugly, and unrefined. That's what the words mean. Shofar means beautiful. Keren means it's ugly, rude, rudimentary. And how do I know? Because the pasuk in Eov, when Eov's talking about philosophy, and he says, Hashem, you process the heavens. You make the heavens beautiful. Look outside, it's blue, and clouds, and rain, and yes, and planet. You made the heavens beautiful. Let's see this pasuk. Shehim Omrim, Shofar, line number two that's highlighted, Eino El Hashem HaKli, an instrument that you manufacture, HaMetukan, it's beautiful. Shetalkin Bo. Look at the next paragraph that I didn't underline, that middle small paragraph at the end, line number two, he quotes a pasuk in Eov. Megizeras, from the word beruha, with Hashem's wind, whatever that means, shafra, shamayim shafra. Hashem put the heavens and was shafra. How do, who knows Hebrew? How do you say to improve something in modern Hebrew?
Lishaper.
Lishaper. Lishaper, lishaper. Lishaper ktsat. In fact, if you're in, let's say, a burger, not for an improvement, and you're in a restaurant, you want a little extra French on the mishpah, a little bit extra French on the mishpah. And when you give a treat to a little kid, what do we call it? A chupava. Take a little treat, it'll improve your day, take a chupava, take a little treat. Rabban says, wait a second, he spoke to the grammarians, and the split between shofar and keren? That's not between hollow and potent. That's between beautiful and elegant. So how do I make sense of this whole equation? So I'll tell you about that, what the Rabban says, and we'll read it together. Rabban says as follows. When the Torah says take a shofar, it says take things that are beautiful. When Rosh Hashanah, Hashem wants you to stand in front of Hashem, Rosh Baruch Hu asks you to stand in front of me, the beautiful process instruments that make beautiful sound. So shut up. We go swimming with you now. Bring, it's his yom. Yom HaGadol Be'Hagar. It's your stay in Malchus Hashem. Bring something beautiful, elegant. Bring it to Hashem. Now, when appendages are still attached to the animal's head, they're unrefined and unprocessed times. So you can't just take an animal and blow it off. That's not a shofar. Not only that, there are certain things that as much as you process, never really process, you just made a hole in them. You didn't really manufacture them. They're not really beautiful. Those are the bones. All these bone things. They make a little hole. Not really a beautiful process. It's a bone if you close them out. It's never going to be beautiful. Things that are hollow, and you hollow them out, you take out the middle and you smooth out the insides. Now you've made a real horn. It's not a language. It's your instrument. Use an instrument. You make something elegant. Here, with my hands, never elegant. Take off, crack off a bone, make a little hole in it, it's not elegant, and process it, an instrument, throw them away, throw the ring away. Rams, sheep, goats, take it off, hollow, smooth, you turn a head appendage into an instrument, you're coming to Hashem with a shofar, a beautiful instrument. And what happens if you find a head appendage that zoologically is hollow, but it's never going to look nice. It's always going to look ugly. It's never going to be. What's the most ugliest horn of all the animals? Come on, line them up. Sheep, goats, rams. What's the most ugly stray?
So it matters.
What's the cow look like? This is like a little. Zoologically, it's hollow. It's not going to be nice. Ram, especially the spirals, it's a little bit twisted. It's smooth, it angles, it looks nice, it's kind of rough. The problem is one of these Viking things. Oh, it's all rude. According to Ramban, that's the cutting edge. Look at this Ramban. It's an amazing Ramban. He started with something that made no sense,
and seemed totally arbitrary. And he worked, and came up with an idea which they all loved. Then he spoke to the Dictyon, and he said, you know what? It may work logically, but the words don't match. So the shofar doesn't mean hollow versus Karen, which means above. The shofar really means elegant and beautiful. So the dividing line between shofar and Karen is not hollow or solid. The dividing line is beautiful and elegant.
What about shofar, the Gemara
says? So they all leave it together. So when you're on the head, forget it. When you take a bone off and make a little hole in it, forget it. Ajax and his antlers. When you take something hollow with a filler and you fill it out, you smooth it out, that's a beautiful instrument. We made an instrument. It's done through our processing. But what happens if the process, I mean, hollow, but someone still something. The par is ugly. It's not just cold. Why does Hashem call a par a Karen? Not as arbitrarily, because it's ugly. It's not a shofar. It doesn't look pretty. It's not elegant. It's not sophisticated. Hashem wants to come on Rosh Hashanah for the nicest presentation. It's a nasal lemon. He didn't want the halachas of what you can. He came on Rosh Hashanah just to be what Hashem decided to call it. Because why would he do that? And why would it matter? There has to be something logical that dictates what I can use, what I can't use. And that logical definition has to be latent in the word shofar versus Karen. Now, Rav's first approach is hollow versus solid, but the dictum didn't stack up, and it still sounded arbitrary, because if a para is hollow, why is it not called a Karen? Who cares? Rav is saying, no, a para is hollow, but it shares characteristics with the bones. What characteristics does a cow share with the bones? They're both ugly. And neither is called a, because they're both ugly. And what's a shofar?
Beautiful.
And what's beautiful? Hollowed out, nice looking things. This is amazing. It's an amazing finish. I'm seeing a shaking of all of them. I see Ramban digging, so down to beginning, maybe 40% of the Rambans. He has a riot through the shot, and then Moshe, he has a question on Tosfos, so he has a question on Tosfos, and what would I give to be in this rush of the Ramban? I don't know, what am I then? Just maybe a couple fingers. To sit there and I'll go and listen to this Ramban. It's amazing. We can Ramban together and then I'll answer your questions. Ramban says his punchline to shofar, line number two, that's a beautiful, beautiful place. What's not beautiful? I'll tell you what's not beautiful. It says three things. Line number two, the chubarin, if they're still attached, they're not beautiful. You can't blow a shofar on the head of the animal. It's not beautiful. The chubarin, the rush and the hymnas, it's not beautiful. Ain't shame shofar in the chubarin clause. You can't say a shofar to anything to match, obviously. Right? Someone asks you, someone said, what's your name?
Man.
Yeah, someone stops in the street. You can blow a shofar by just making a little hole when it's attached to the animal's head there, as long as you do that. How do you know? Why not? I said, why not? If you don't have this in mind, why not? Why can't you just make a little hole and go, ooh, why not? Guys, this is what Lumbus does. I'm trying to understand. Once you take a detail and you roll it into a category, then you can apply it behind the detail. What's your name?
Alicia.
So let's say, sorry for a second, I want to do Lumbus for Alicia. And I look at the way you're dressed, and I look at your pants, and I look at your sneakers, and I say, all those facts make me think you are living in Argentina. Oh, you live in Tina, you probably are, you know, my neighbor, whoever. I've taken what I see from you, I've turned that into a category, and I deploy that. That's what relates us. You see, that was that thing. God has a category. Oh, now the category has to be beautiful. What else is in beautiful? Things are okay.
Can I point to your answer?
Well, you have some cool, but he just has a brush on that's also beautiful. Okay, that's the Ramban never gets to Jesse. But based on the Pasuk, Jesse would probably say, let a shofar is not as ugly as you think, because it's encoded in the Hilas HaMachaz that you call the shofar. And then you have to ask why does Hashem see it as beautiful or not? But he doesn't understand why he crossed it. This is just starting the Mashal. Why does Hashem want a beautiful flea? Why is it more than Rosh Hashanah? The Ramban, I'm not sure what he wrote this, because he sees the shofar. They don't discuss the Ramban or Queen's son, they don't really care what the shofar is, because they don't know what it is. Oh, it's a comb. This is a major, guys. I've thought about this for about 30 years. Seriously, I think about this every year, Rosh Hashanah,
I have an ongoing dialogue with a friend of mine, he's a Rosh Hashiva, and Rosh Hashanah, we go over this Ramban, and we say, cool, another Chiddush, another angle, another side. This is something I live on Rosh Hashanah. What does Hashem want from me from Rosh Hashanah? So I can sit there with some coffee and think, what does Hashem want from me? Or I can sit there and start to define the halachos and what the categories are. Now that I know the categories, what does Hashem want from me? Now that I know Hashem wants elegant, well, why does Hashem want from me? What is this? How does this change my Rosh Hashanah? How does the Ramban change my Rosh Hashanah? So this is how the Rav taught us to accelerate, to get the Machshava through Lamas. Not just to sit over a cup of coffee and say, what do you think about Torah? What do you think about Tefillin? What do you think? No, let's learn Sefes Menachos. Define Tefillin. What is a Bais? What is a Parsha? What is a Ritzura? What is it? Oh, now why is Hashem defining that way for them? So the Ramban says, what's not elegant? Let's just read the Ramban. Line number two, call the Chubarim are not elegant. Line number three, below the Shleiman, even when you take it off, if they're Shalom, if they're an SM, they're not elegant. Come in Shekhantam. Okay? And then, he says later, I'm not going to read more because I have to go back and share. Okay, what's your question? Well, somebody.
We're going to call you to the Ramban, second Shita. We learned in the Gemara that Shofar is a Shalom part. What, like, you seem to say that the Ramban says that it's Mishtaper.
That was Rabbi Bloom's question. Evidently, the Ramban would learn that Rabbi Yossi feels that based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, a par isn't as ugly as you would think. You and I may think it's ugly, but Hashem doesn't think it's as ugly, according to Rabbi Yossi, because he called it to Davar Melzirach HaKadosh.
He just doesn't use Shofar.
He uses Shofar, that's what he does. Okay, so let's review today's share, guys, okay? What is the Mishnah Pasuk? Let's go back to the beginning. Why is it Pasuk? Okay, what's the problem logically? Okay, according to Chachamim, it's called the Karen. Everything else is also called the Karen, but everything else is called the Shofar. What's the problem logically with the triple pshat?
What matters
where Hashem calls it? Now, it's a whole separate shiur. Maybe it does matter. Anyone know where else in Shas it makes a difference when Hashem calls something? Hadasim a little bit. You can't have to be Hadas without Hashem Lavai. Maybe Marvin Sogan, it can't have a second name to it. So that's an interesting category also. Let's turn the clock back. It's now 10:45. I'm going to give a different shiur. Okay, not the Ramban. I'm walking in. Guys, when in the Lacha did we care about the Torah? When in the Lacha did we not care about the Torah? That's also a context. What is it talking about mitzvahs? Hashem could care less what we call mitzvahs. Hashem could care less what we call a sukkah. But he does care what we call the horn of the appendage of Bosom Rosh Hashanah. And he does care what we call Hadassim. And he does care what we call Malach, basically Marab Sachem. So who we're going to give today's shiur? Not the Ramban. We have a lot of inaccuracies. Well, what about a ram? A ram is never called a shofar. And what about an ibex? An ibex, why is it in the Mishnah? So it's not just the logic that's problematic, but it's the just doesn't fit. Those are the few problems our mind is jostling in his head. The logic doesn't make sense, but it doesn't fit. Because why is it an ibex in the Mishnah? And why is a ram kosher? Don't call the shofar, whoever gets that title. That's it. This has to be something else. There's got to be something deeper to shofar in there. It can't just be one shofar, because it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. Rabban said, you know what? A shofar is hollow. A keren is a bone. And for some reason, Hashem wants hollowed out casing. I don't know why. He doesn't want bone. I don't know why in this first stage. And there's one hollowed out casing that the Torah happens to slap a bad name on for. Called the Torah. Okay? I don't know why the Torah slaps on that name, but it slaps it on. And that like lit up all the Chachmei, all the French Rishon. Wow, never heard anything like that. I said, wait a second, Moshe, it seems like Pelsis was saying it, maybe Shimshon was saying it. But then Ramban said, I want to talk to my friends, you know, grammar. And I said, that's very nice, but that's not what shofar means, Moshe. It's not mean, hollow versus bony. Shofar means beautiful. Karen, what? It doesn't mean that. So like, I got to rethink this equation. Shofar is beautiful, Karen is ugly. So everything is ugly. To get it to be beautiful, you have to have three stages. You gotta attach it, you gotta hollow it out, and it has to look nice. If it's attached, it's still ugly. If it's a bone, it's never gonna be nice. And even if it's a casing covering some substance, it can also still remain ugly. What remains ugly forever, that's why the Torah calls it a Karen of the meal. What is always gonna be ugly, no matter how much mascara it puts on? Put a pig in mascara, so it'll be good. You can put a par on hollow and shape and chisel. It's still going to be an ugly little vitamin one. Never a French one. When it comes back to Shabbat from Rosh Hashanah, like it. Comes back to Shabbat from Rosh Hashanah, it's a beautiful, beautiful instrument.
Zamru lefanav, zamru lokenu zameiru, zamru lokenu zameiru. Let's stand on Rosh Hashanah and celebrate Malchus Hashem. On Sunday in Eretz Hashem, we talk about a whole different reason that a par is possible. Who knows why Ula says a par is possible? Not because Shofar and Keren. Why can't we use a para? In Katego, Nasa Sanego. When does it apply? What does it mean? That's Sunday.
Thank you.
So you're saying the ugliness is not a question of its anatomy or its structure, it's a question of
what it's
like. We don't know.
How about that? Too much.
Write down that table. Don't forget the table of Tosis.
I have it written down.
Four sectors.
My dad goes through this, the Tosis and Velasha. I hear it like one, like three times, four times a year. Like, and he goes to come meet him and stuff, and he's like, oh, I saw it. I have it on the videos.
Okay, guys, go back to the short clothing. What?
Thank you.
I'll see you tonight. You're on tonight's program. Whatever you guys want
to know. If you make a horror beautiful, if you make a character, what lies that?
Chemically, the ricochet of the casing is very different than the ricochet of the bone. I'm not a musical instrument. So with the musical, I can tell you how sound bounces off the concerto and what the difference is. So evidently, I took a bone there's something where what about this bony Who makes articles and bones?
Schloss. You came to speak in my permits here. TBC. Right.
Is that your program too?
I think so, but well, I don't really know.
Thank you, Abby.
Okay.
Why do I
feel
like
those
enjoying
the program? Guys, everything so much.
You're
welcome. Have a
great day. You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Yishai Kaufman, are you up?
Yeah,
Hey.
There's
another Yishai.
No, that was me.
Oh, we met already.
Oh, yeah, we met.
I didn't write your name. Awesome. Alright. Right, right. Beautiful. Wow.
Amazing, Rambani.
Really, yeah, amazing. Welcome to Jewish history. Wow.
They just don't know, otherwise it's
Yeah. I wish I could more else.
No, it's all just the internet. Until they know who these people were, it just seems like...
My father-in-law, I think, Alan Schwartz, he's also married.
From... Yeah, from he, I mean, he's...